Today is the holy disappearance anniversary of Shri Padmadvacharya. I'm sorry, I have a little bit of a cold, so please forgive me. He was a great devotee of the Lord, according to traditional sources, his biographers. He was a triple incarnation of Hanuman, Bhima, and Vayu, all at the same time. That's a pretty powerful combination. And certainly Madhvacharya executed pastimes in a very robust, radical, confrontational manner, in a very kshatriya kind of a mood. He saw it as the purpose of his incarnation, to rout the Mayavad philosophy totally. He had zero tolerance for any tinge of Advaita. Now, those who have studied Vedanta know that there are different ways to interpret the Vedas, and the conclusion of the Vedas, the Upanishads, are summarized by Vyasa himself in the Vedanta Sutra, but Vedanta Sutra has also been understood in different ways by different acharyas, even amongst those acharyas who specialize in Vedanta. And we have all the way from pure dualism, which is Madhvacharya, that's called Shuddhadvaita, pure dualism, to Shuddhadvaita, which was taught by Vallabhacharya around 500 years ago, that's pure monism, although it's Vaishnavism at the same time. So those are the extremists amongst the Vaishnava acharyas. And in between most of the acharyas, they posit some sort of identity and difference, what we call bheda-bhed, achintya-bheda-bhed, is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's version of it. Nimbarka acharya also taught the same idea without specifying the achintya-shakti, as our acharyas do. Ramanuja acharya, on the other hand, who was Madhva's predecessor, he had preached what he called Vishishta Advaita. Yes, there's Advaita, but it's Vishishta. It's a special, there's specialization within this Advaita, within this non-dualism. So that wasn't enough for Madhvacharya. So he preached what he called Shuddha Advaita, pure dualism. And from the very beginning of his life, he was an extraordinary personality. In his youth, he was, of course, very athletic, and he excelled in sports, naturally. We would expect Hanuman to excel in things that require great agility. Thank you. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is one purport in which Srila Prabhupada talks a little bit about Madhvacharya, his background, his birth, his activities, etc. I'll see if I can find that. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to South India, he stopped in Udupi. Udupi is in South Kannada district in South India, and Madhvacharya appeared near that place. So Srila Prabhupada writes, this is Manjalila, chapter 9, text 245. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu next arrived at Udupi, the place of Madhvacharya, where the philosophers known as the Tattvavadis resided. There, he saw the deity of Lord Krishna and became mad with ecstasy. Has anyone here ever been to Udupi? Raise your hand. Then you know. You know why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became mad with ecstasy when he saw the deity of Krishna. We'll talk in a moment about that deity, very special form of the Lord. So the purport says, Shripad Madhvacharya took his birth near Udupi, which is situated in the South Kannada district of South India, just west of Sahyadri. This is the chief city in South Kannada province and is near the city of Mangalore, which is situated to the south of Udupi. Near the city of Udupi is a place called Pajaka Kshetra, where Madhvacharya took his birth in his Shivalli Brahmana dynasty as the son of Madhyageha Bhakta in the year 1040 Shikabda, which corresponds to the Christian year 1118. According to some, he was born in the year 1160 Shikabda, which is Christian era 1238. Now, they don't really know the name of Madhvacharya's father. He's called here Madhyageha. What does Madhyageha mean? The house in the middle. So that's where he lived, in Pajaga Kshetra. And it seems that their background, they were what we call Bhagavata Shaivas. This is an old tradition in the south. I think maybe no more, but they worship both Shiva and Vishnu, and they emphasize the oneness of Shiva and Vishnu, because Shiva and Vishnu are in some sense one, just as milk and yogurt are one. But there are two famous old temples in Udupi itself. They are the Chandramaleshwara temple, which is a temple of Shiva. And there's another temple, special temple called the Ananteshwara temple. And that also has a Shiva linga installed in the temple, but that temple is considered to be Ananteshwara, Anantashayana, Anantashesha, not Shiva, even though he comes in the form of the Shiva lingam. So Madhvacharya's parents were worshipping in this temple. They would come to Udupi and do their puja there, and they were great devotees. But they were without any child. And so they were praying to the Lord that he would be able to give them some child, as parents often do. Anyway, so one day Madhyageha Bhatta, Madhva's father, he saw that there was a devotee in an ecstatic state who had climbed to the top of the flagpole in front of the temple. And he was announcing that soon there will be an incarnation of Vayu taking birth here, and he will rout out all irreligion. And Madhyageha Bhatta had an intuition when he heard this, that he's going to take birth as my son. And in due course of time, his wife became pregnant, and they delivered Madhvacharya. And this would have been in 1118, or whichever those dates you prefer. So, in his childhood, Madhvacharya was known as Vasudeva, and there are some wonderful stories surrounding him. It is said that once, when his father had piled up many debts, Madhvacharya converted tamarind seeds into actual coins to pay them off. This one man had... Everybody knows what hartal is? Those who speak Hindi, they know. When workers go on strike, or in the old days, the system was that if somebody owes you something and you can't get him to give it back to you, you just camp out on his porch until he does. So that's what this man had threatened to do, and Madhva's father was in some anxiety. So Madhvacharya climbed up into a tamarind tree, and he picked a bunch of seeds, and he turned them into gold coins and poured them out into this man's hands. And this man went back and told Madhva's father about it, and what's he supposed to think? But when he was 5 years old, he was offered the sacred thread. Generally, the children, boys, are offered sacred thread between 8 and 12. Madhva was 5. How precocious he was. In fact, it doesn't really say here, but his original tutor was named Thottam Nilaya. And this man was teaching him the Vedas, as was the tradition in those days. Sometimes we wonder what will happen to that tradition. The Vedas are eternal sound vibration, but unless they're eternally vibrated, what will happen? In the modern society, these things are disappearing fast. Not disappearing, they're being erased as fast as possible. But at any rate, he seemed to be more interested in sports than in his studies. And so his tutor came and told him one day that I think maybe you need to put more attention into your studies. So Madhvacharya then astonished his teacher by reciting not only the recent lesson that they had been studying, but the entire Veda in which that lesson was located. He recited the whole thing, not only in forward order, but also backwards. And also each word and each syllable, and they have a system for Vedic chanting how they do this. So he did this, and the teacher was thoroughly astonished. and probably a little intimidated at the same time. Anyway, so therefore he was offered the sacred thread when he was only 5. A demon named Murnaman lived near his house in the form of a snake, and at the age of 5, Madhvacharya killed that snake with the toe of his left foot. When his mother was very much disturbed, he would appear before her. From wherever he happened to be playing, he would come immediately in front of his mother whenever she called, in one leap. So he may have been a quarter of a mile away, but still, he would jump like this. Later on, we'll see that he didn't lose that ability. So he was a great scholar, even in childhood, and although his father did not agree, he adopted sannyas at the age of 12. He went to the temple, and at age 12, he wanted to move into the temple. And I moved into the temple when I was 15, and my mother was very mad. But you can imagine at the age of 12. Anyway, so Madhvacharya, he insisted that he was going to take sannyas at that age. And his father, they flatly disagreed, of course. His parents objected. But Madhvacharya would not leave the temple. And no matter how many times they tried in so many ways, they just could not bring the boy home. And they tried once, and then he left again. And he went, this time he went touring with his guru. At this time, his guru was Achyuta Preksha, who was the Matadish in that ashram. And finally, they caught up with him, and his father begged him and pleaded with him, and in so many ways, you know, tried to get him to come home. Still, Madhva would not agree. Finally, his father threatened suicide. If you don't come home, I'm going to kill myself. Even then, Madhvacharya would not agree. Shri Shri Gaurnithai Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Shri Shri Radha Shyama Sundara Kijay. Even when threatened with the suicide of his father, Madhvacharya still flatly refused to come home. Finally, the exasperated parents, they were probably astonished as well. They said, "Have you no mercy in your heart that you're our only child? Who's going to take care of us? We're getting older now." At this, Madhvacharya finally relented and said, "Okay, I will stay at home until you have another son." And sure enough, as soon as Madhyageha Bhattacharya's wife conceived, Madhva was gone and the parents couldn't do anything. He lived up to his end of the promise. So that was his sannyas. Upon receiving sannyas from Achyuta Preksha, he received the name Purna Prajna Tirtha. Purna Prajna. Purna Prajna means he has full wisdom. In childhood, he was named Vasudeva, and upon initiation, he was named Purna Prajna Tirtha. That's his sannyas name. Therefore, there's a famous school in Bangalore, Madhvite institution, called Purna Prajna Vidyapitham. It's founded by the Madhvas. So, after traveling all over India, he finally discussed scriptures with Vidyashankar. Okay, we'll get to that in a moment. First of all, he astonished his teacher, Achyuta Preksha, because Achyuta Preksha, after giving him sannyas, the first thing he started to teach him was a famous book called the Ishta Siddhi. In Advaita circles, this is the statement of Advaita philosophy. But Achyuta Preksha had gotten no further than the first verse, and Madhvacharya countered everything that he said in 30 or 40 different ways. From that many angles, he said, "This is just wrong." And so Achyuta Preksha was a little astonished as well. And Madhva explained his position very clearly, and doubtless Achyuta Preksha must have been impressed. But he wasn't convinced, and he said, "If you think that this is wrong, then you need to write your own commentary on Vedanta Sutra." And Madhvacharya said, "Okay, I'll do that." So he was, by this time, he was causing a lot of problems in some sense, as every great reformer does in the beginning. He was very radical. It's hard to imagine how radical he was. He was not even accepting Ramanujacharya, not even accepting, certainly not accepting Shankaracharya. And in defense of his views, he used to quote from sources that nobody else ever even heard of. And sources that no longer existed. And so that was also controversial. As we know from reading Bhagavatam, those who have carefully read Srila Prabhupada's edition of the Srimad Bhagavatam, they know. There are certain whole passages of the Srimad Bhagavatam that he just dismisses as interpolation. Or he adds other sections that no one else accepts. Once when he was countered for this tendency that he displayed a lot, he was asked, well, you know, how do you know all these things? And where are you getting, you know, we've never heard of these sources. How do you know about them? And he said, well, I know about this from all my previous lives. So that was pretty radical also. But at any rate, finally once he came upon one of the sannyasis from Sringeri Math. Sringeri Math, as the crow flies, is not very far away from Udupi, but philosophically they're as far as possible from the Tattvavadi position. In fact, we call them Mayavadis, as opposed to Tattvavadis. Mayavad means what? Literally. Illusionism. Those who teach illusion. Mayavad. Their philosophy is an illusion. Or more charitably, we can say that they teach a philosophy that this Maya is itself an illusion. Now, how you work that into a system of pure monism is really, it does not fit within logic. That's one of the many reasons that Madhva argued with it. Because if you say there's Brahma, Satya, Jagan, Mithya, that's of course two things, not one. So Madhva didn't agree with him. But anyway, he finally came to argue with Vidyashankar. And Vidyashankar was diminished in the presence of Madhvacharya. So later on there was a plot on the part, they say, of the Sringeri sannyasis that they came to steal Madhva's library. And they actually did that. But Madhva enlisted the king, I think his name was Jaya Singh, and somehow he got his books back and also defeated the Mayavadis. Very, very strong, very, very robust, almost militant Vaishnavism, uncompromising Vaishnavism he was preaching, and particularly directing almost all of his literary efforts against Mayavad. Sometimes Madhvacharya has been criticized because more than establishing his own system in a very cohesive way, he devoted about 80 or 90% of his attention to just trouncing Mayavad. Something like in ISKCON, we sometimes bash the scientists very roundly for their obvious flaws, but we don't really offer that many clear alternatives. That's something to think about also. But at any rate, Madhvacharya was doing like this. So the Mayavadis were certainly rankled. Then, and like many others before them, they demanded that, well, if you think you know so much, then let's see your interpretation of Vedanta. Write a commentary on the Brahma Sutras. So, accompanied by Satyatirtha, Madhvacharya went to Badrikashram. It was there that he met Vyasadeva and explained his commentary on Bhagavad Gita before Vyas. Now let me remember, I don't recall the exact line, but one of the lines of Madhva's Gita commentary is that I'm going to explain this shaktitaha, as according to my ability. So it's said that Vyas actually corrected him and suggested, no, instead of that you should say leshataha, just in a little bit, because your ability is limitless. The ability is, the limit is only in those who are listening to you. Your understanding is not limited. So, Vyas gave him his blessings. And then, he came to the Ananda Math from Badrikashram. He had finished his commentary in the Bhagavad Gita. His companion Satyatirtha wrote down the entire commentary. When Madhvacharya returned from Badrikashram, he went to Ganjama, which is on the bank of the river Godavari. He actually went through Bihar and maybe Bengal side, through UP, Bihar, like that. And there are many pastimes there that we could talk about, but time is limiting. So finally he came to Orissa district, that's Ganjam. And then, as Prabhupada says here, that he met with two learned scholars named Shobhana Bhatta and Swami Shastri. These scholars became known in the disciplic succession of Madhvacharya as Padmanabha Tirtha and Narahari Tirtha. Padmanabha Tirtha was a great Shastri, as his name implied, and Narahari Tirtha was a great statesman. He was almost, he was like prime minister to the king, so very, very competent individuals. And Madhvacharya defeated them, and they were so sincere that they surrendered. This is a thing that we don't find so much in Kali Yuga. Even a person is thoroughly trounced, but he still won't give up his views. We can learn from our acharyas like this. Bilva Mangala Thakur, for example, he was chastised even by a whore, even by a prostitute, but he took it seriously because of his humility. Anyway, when he returned to Udupi, he would sometimes bathe in the ocean. Incidentally, he brought back from Orissa, from Kalinga rather, this Mular Sitaram deities, famous old deities that were worshipped by Ikshvaku Maharaj, and they're still in Udupi, as I understand. Or maybe they've gone somewhere else, but... Okay, so he came back, and one day, while sitting beside the ocean, engaged in meditation upon Lord Krishna, he saw a large boat containing goods for Dwarka was in danger. He gave some signs by which the boat could approach the shore, and it was saved. The owners of the boat wanted to give him a present, and at that time Madhvacharya agreed to take some Gopi Chandan. He received a big lump of Gopi Chandan, and as it was being brought to him, it broke apart. Now, there's a long backstory to this. You all know this story, I think. When the Gopi Chandan broke apart, it revealed a large deity of Krishna. The deity had a stick in one hand and a lump of food in the other. As soon as Madhvacharya received the deity in this way, he composed a prayer. The deity was so heavy that not even 30 people could lift it, yet Madhvacharya personally brought this deity to Udupi. 8 of Madhvacharya's sannyasi disciples became the directors of his 8 monasteries, and worship of the Lord Krishna deity is still going on at Udupi, according to the plans Madhvacharya established. When Krishna was on this planet, according to the Madhvacharya Sampradaya Acharyas, the queens of Dwarka, they wanted to hear about Krishna's childhood pastimes. And Krishna told them that, you know, that's actually not a very good idea because it's not your mood. You are meant to be queens here in Dwarka. And if you hear about Vrindavan, it's just going to be, for you, it's going to be rasabhas. And so he discouraged them and said, you just better not, don't go there. But they were insistent because there was one very principal lady in Dwarka who was witness to the pastimes of Brajatham. Who was that? Rohini Devi, Balaram's exalted mother. Rohini Devi ki jai. So she had agitated all the minds of the queens by narrating the Braj Leelas. And so they were fixed on this sadhya. They wanted to understand what is this Krishna Vrindavan Leela. So they wouldn't give up so easily. Even Rukmini, his own wife, was in this mood. And so Krishna many times tried to dissuade them, but they wouldn't be dissuaded. So finally, Krishna agreed to... They wanted Krishna to show them his Balila form. His form as a small Gopal. And so finally, they were so insistent that he had to do it. Krishna becomes under the control of those devotees that he loves in this way. So he showed this form, exactly the form of this deity that Madhva worshipped. And he's actually holding a churning rod. That stick that Prabhupada mentions is actually a churning rod that they used to use in the old days for churning butter. Now, if we don't buy it from Amul, then we just put something in the blender and that's it. But in the old days, they would put it in a pot and they would have to do this. And the gopis churiyan, these bangles that every woman wears, they would jingle and jangle and make a rhythmic noise, and they would sing kirtan. With that tal, they would sing the kirtan. It's described in Hari Bhakti Vilas that in the early morning, we should all remember these gopis as they sing this auspicious kirtan, because their kirtan dissipates inauspiciousness in every direction, all over the universes. Anyway, so Krishna is holding this churning rod and some ropes also. And maybe, probably, he's got some butter in his hands, no doubt, as well. This is the form that he showed. And he was frisking around and playing in so many ways, and he was doing so much mischief with his mother, stealing her churning rod, etc., etc. And these Patamahishis, the queens of Dwarka, became so enchanted, so thoroughly entranced and delighted by this form, they all, unanimously, they all voted that just, you know, stay this way. Don't go back to this Dwarka. We like this better. And Krishna said, Are, I told you this would happen. And so anyway, then there was a truce, the queens would not give up, and Krishna would also not give up. So finally they came to an agreement that Krishna said, I will become a deity just like this, and you can worship. So this Krishna form that was playing around amidst the queens of Dwarka, he froze in the form of this deity of Udupishi Krishna. And he was worshipped thereafter mainly by Rukmini. She had her own garden in her own palace, as did all the queens in Dwarka. It was called Rukmini Van. And in Rukmini Van, she had built a small temple. And in that temple, she was daily worshipping this Bal Gopal form of Krishna. Now, we know the story that after the Moshala Leela, and after Krishna disappeared from this world, and all of his associates were taken, and Dwarka fell into the sea, so everything was lost, and the deity somehow came to be buried within the depths of what they call Gopi Talab, a famous pond in Dwarka, where all of our Gopi Chandan comes from that place only. So, probably that's how this boat from Dwarka got the huge boulder of Gopi Chandan. He was using it as a ballast in the hold of his ship to keep the ship steady. And Madhvacharya, when he saw this, actually that day in Udupi when they went to the beach, Madhva often used to go to the beach and meditate and chant Hare Krishna there. But on that day, Madhvacharya had a very strong premonition, because his preaching was very successful. He was gathering many followers. He was making waves in the world of religious history. He had already written his commentary. He was no longer a rebellious youth. He was established as a respected acharya. And he thought, if we have in our ashram some deity around which my disciples can all focus their devotion, that would be a very good thing. And so he was praying like that, and one day he got this premonition, had this prescience that the deity will come today. And so when he went to the beach at Malpe, place near Udupi, he sat there and was composing this stotram, which later came to be known as Dwadasha Stotras, 12 stotras, beginning with Vande Vandyam Sadanandam Vasudeva Niranjanam Indirapati Madhyadim Varadesha Varatparadam. This is the mood of most of his Dwadasha Stotram. The translation is, I offer my respectful obeisances unto that most worshipable Supreme Lord, who is always blissful, eternally blissful, who is called Vasudeva, who is all-pervading, who is also the son of Vasudeva, who is absolutely unblemished, stainless, pristine in his purity, Indirapatim, Adyadim. He is the lord of the goddess of fortune, Indira, and all the devas who are themselves givers of benedictions, they go to Indira, Lakshmi, for their own benedictions, but he's their lord. Therefore I offer him obeisances. He also wrote another very beautiful and very deep prayer. Srishti Stiti Pralaya Sarga Mahavibhute. Srishti Stiti Pralaya Sarga Mahavibhute Vritti Prakashani Amavriti Bandha Mokshaha Yasya Apangala Vamatrata Urjita Sa Shri Riyat Kataksha Balavati Ajitam Namami. I offer my respectful obeisances unto that unconquered Supreme Lord, the mere glance of whose eternal consort, Lakshmi Devi, is sought by the best of all the demigods, because her fleeting glance has the potency to affect creation, sustenance, dissolution, great wonder, one's all occupations, all the rules and regulations governing society, all the covering that we fall into in when we were in illusion, and bondage and liberation also. All these things are affected simply by this Lakshmi Devi's glance. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto that Ajita, that Supreme Lord. Actually, if you read between the lines, he's offering his obeisances unto the Lord's eternal Shakti. Another form of Srimati Radharani. But it wasn't his position to reveal these things. So he didn't do so. He didn't reveal the majesty, the supreme devotional preeminence of Srimati Radharani, the Hlarini Shakti of the Lord. He didn't directly reveal that. That was to come later on from those in his line. Namely, whom? Madhavendra Puri, Ishwara Puri, like that. They are the ones who really established the glory of Srimati Radharani. Anyway, so he established this deity. He was meditating on the Dwadasha Stotram like this. And he had composed five of those stotras when he saw this boat off on a sandbar off the shore. So being the incarnation of whom? Hanuman, Bhima, and Vayu. He took his cloth, it said, the sannyasis wear this cloth on the top, and he went, and he waved his cloth, and this boat was maybe a mile and a half offshore. But it created such a huge gale that it just blew the boat off the sandbar. And the captain and all of his crew were thoroughly astonished by this, and they came on shore just, they thought, well, we don't know what that man is. Well, they came to get his blessings and to offer, they said, anything you want from this boat, we're full of merchandise going to South India to sell from Dwarka. Anything at all that you want, you just please take it. Madhvacharya answered, We're just sannyasis. We don't really need anything, but we do use this gopi chandan. We can use that. So the captain ordered his crew to take this block of gopi chandan out. They couldn't lift it, as Prabhupada wrote here. Madhvacharya himself lifted it up, and he took it out and put it on the ground. And after thanking him profusely, they paid obeisances and they left. And Madhva and his party proceeded back to Udupi. Now, about halfway to Udupi, there's a Balaram temple, which is called Varabandheshwara. And they stopped there. And when they stopped at that place, they put down this block of gopi chandan. Madhvacharya was carrying it. He put it down, and that's when it split open. That's actually the place where Udupi Shri Krishna revealed himself. And then they saw this beautiful deity holding the churning rod and the ropes that he stole from his mother. The same deity that was worshipped thousands of years earlier by Rukmini Devi in Dwarka, somehow or other, Krishna arranged, as he always does, to reciprocate with the pure devotion of his devotee and to give this deity to Madhvacharya. Then they took the deity back. Madhvacharya was in ecstasy at this point. If you read the Dwadasha Stotras, you can see that from this point on, for the rest of the stotras, there's seven or so remaining, they become very lyrical and ecstatic in character. Not so formal style anymore. Just, he's singing things like, Devaki Nandana Nanda Kumara Vrindavan Anjana Gokula Chandra Kanda Palashna, like this. O son of Devaki, Nanda Kumara, O moon of Gokula, who is eating roots and fruits in the woods when you go out for Gocharan, like this. And he says, Ananda Mukunda Varatpada, my dear Mukunda, giver of bliss, bestower of benedictions, Charitam Nyapayamete, please enlighten me about your activities. Let me understand, how is it that you've come to me in this form? He's praying like this, Madhvacharya. So he finished his Dwadasha Stotras in the form you can imagine as Sankirtana on the way back to Udupi. They were all singing. in ecstasy. So they wash the Didi very carefully in the Madhva Sarovar, that's the temple tank behind the temple in Udupi, and then they installed it, and the Didi is being worshipped there to this day, as Prabhupada wrote here. Now, Madhva then for a second time visited Badrikashram. While he was passing through Maharashtra, the local king was digging a big lake for the public benefit. As Madhvacharya passed through that area with his disciples, he was also obliged to help in the excavation. After some time, when Madhvacharya visited the king, he engaged the king in that work and departed with his disciples. Often in the province of Ganga Pradesh, there were fights between Hindus and Muslims. The Hindus were on one bank and the Muslims on the other. Due to community tension, no boat was available for crossing the river. But Madhvacharya did not care for these soldiers. He crossed the river anyway, and when he met with soldiers on the other side, he was brought before the king. The Muslim king was so impressed with him, was so pleased with him, that he wanted to give him a kingdom and some money, but Madhvacharya refused. In other words, this Muslim king thought, who is this person who has the temerity to overstep my rule that no Hindu can set foot here? He was impressed at Madhva's, what we call, chutzpah. Therefore he offered Madhva anything he wanted, because after speaking with him he could understand that this person is no lightweight. Even intellectually he was a genius as well. He's a very good musician also. There are stories about Madhvacharya. By singing one time, he made a plant sprout from a seed, grow into a tree, and produce fruits and flowers. Just by singing. It's said like that, at least in classical music, they say that if you sing Rag Deepak, you can ignite lamps, if you're a perfect singer. Singing Rag Malahari, you can make it rain, like this. Stories about Tansen and other famous musicians. Anyway, so Madhvacharya was of this class. It's said that he played the Veena. So, what else? While walking on the road, he was attacked by some dacoits, but by his bodily strength, he killed them all. There is a huge boulder in a river in South India. Huge boulder, maybe the size of this building. And there's a Sanskrit inscription on the side of that boulder that says that Madhvacharya had put it in the middle of the river with one hand. When he went to Badrikashram also, his disciples were getting tired, but he was very eager to see Vyasadeva, so he didn't really want to wait for his disciples, and he just started hopping over mountains one at a time. And he got there very quickly, and his disciples came, we can imagine, a few weeks later perhaps. When his companion Satyatirtha was attacked by a tiger, Madhvacharya separated them by virtue of his tremendous strength, his great strength. When he met with Vyasadeva, he received from him the Shalagram Shila known as Ashtamurti. After this, he summarized Mahabharata. Mahabharata, you can imagine, is a very important book for someone who is the incarnation of Bhima. And therefore he's able to give its tatparya. He knows from personal experience. In his Dwadasha Stotras, there's one of the verses says, Smarami Rajivalochanam or something like that, I don't remember. And the commentator writes there that the reason Madhvacharya is using the verb smarami, I remember, Ramchandra, is because he does remember. He was Hanuman in the Leela himself. So Vayu is another thing. See, all of us, we're all moving, we're all kept alive simply by Vayu, if you think about it. If the airs are no longer working in this body, it cannot sustain life. Therefore, another name, Madhvacharya, is also called Mukhya Pran, the chief of all the pranas. Interesting facts there. Madhvacharya's devotion to the Lord and his erudite scholarship became known throughout India. Consequently, the owners of Sringeri Math, established by Shankaracharya, became a little perturbed. We've already told that story, so I'm going to skip over that. Yeah, this Jai Singh was the ruler of Kumbhla, and he was the one who got his books back. Now, a great personality named Trivikramacharya, who was resident of Vishnu Mangala, became Madhvacharya's disciple. He was a great scholar, this Trivikram Pandit Acharya. And after becoming his disciple, his son later became Narayanacharya, the composer of Sri Madhva Vijaya. Madhva Vijaya, or Sumadhva Vijaya, it's also called, that is the authorized biography of Madhvacharya, and most of the information that we're relating today is coming from that source, if it's not here in Prabhupada's purport. So after the death of Trivikramacharya, the younger brother of Narayanacharya took sannyas and later became known as Vishnutirtha. So all the things that we hear about Madhvacharya, unlike those that we hear about other acharyas, they're almost first-hand accounts, because they were composed just after Madhva's departure from this world. With the Shankara Digvijaya, as it's called, that's the biography of Shankaracharya, for example, that was composed hundreds of years after Shankaracharya's departure from this world. Not so with this book. This book was composed by persons who knew and worked closely with Madhvacharya. Something like the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita is very authoritative because it's first-hand. It is reputed that there was no limit to the bodily strength of Purnapragna Madhvacharya. He had another name, which is Anandatirtha. And in fact, the name Madhva is considered to be just an abbreviation of this longer name, Anandatirtha. Ananda means Madhu. The word Madhu means Ananda, something which is sweet or something which is blissful. That's Ananda. And Va is, they say, is another form of the word Tirtha, which means sacred place or access point, we can say. So Anandatirtha therefore means the exact same thing as Madhva. Therefore his name is also Anandatirtha, and he was given the title Bhagavatpada. So Gopal Krishna Maharaj is not the first one. This is a traditional title as well for an acharya. So it was reputed that there was no limit to the bodily strength of Purnapragna Madhvacharya. There was a person named Karanjadi who was famed for possessing the strength of 30 men. Madhvacharya placed the toe of his foot upon the ground and asked the man to separate it from the ground. But the great strong man could not do so, even after great effort. It's said that there was a great flagpole with we call Dvajastambha, especially in South Indian temples, they have these poles in the front. And they're very heavy because sometimes they're made out of pure iron. Used to be in the north. Anybody here ever been to Delhi in the area known as Qutub Minar? There's a place there where there's another one of these poles. Anyway, they used to be all over the place, but you can imagine they're very heavy. So there were two strong men. They had the strength of 30 men, but they could not lift one of these poles. So you can understand their strength. And Madhvacharya said, try to separate my big toe from the ground. And they couldn't do that either. Now, I don't think it's stated here, so I'll just add a few interesting points. Madhvacharya in his early days, but also throughout his leelas when he was preaching, he would often go to home programs, as we do now, and he would be hosted there, and he would be given a great feast on many occasions, we can imagine, after his preaching. And on one such occasion, after having consumed a huge feast, after the feast, the host brought before him a large tray of several hundred bananas and pots of milk. The idea is that the Swamiji will bless this and then they can distribute it to those outside who could not get in or who could not get prasadam. Sometimes we also do this. Prabhupada used to do this also. Old tradition. So they brought before Madhvacharya several hundred bananas and 30 pots of milk. And Madhvacharya nonchalantly ate the whole thing just like that. And the astonished host, you can imagine, that this is a great thing for your reputation if you want to get some attention. Get your message out there. Just do something like this. So, and he did this not once, but on many occasions it was a standard thing that he was known to do, and therefore people would bring him these massive amounts of prasada and he would eat all of it. And someone asked him, how are you able to do this? I mean, this is after a big feast. Bananas and milk after a big feast. How are you able to do this? And Madhvacharya just matter-of-factly replied that my digestive powers are superhuman. Which in fact they were. It's another story tells that when he was a child, one day they left him in the care of his elder sister as a babysitter. Parents had to go outside of town. And so she was responsible to make sure that he ate, but she evidently didn't really watch him close enough, because there was a huge barrel, they have these old clay pots that are just huge, and it was full of horse gram. I don't know how you say this. What's horse gram? Like some heavy dal, and raw, just the dal seeds. And Madhvacharya, his sister, came back and found that the whole barrel had been tipped over, and Madhvacharya was finishing the last of these. He ate the whole thing. Raw, uncooked, dal, a huge pot of it. So he had this ability. Because after all, who is he the incarnation of? Bhima, Vrikodara. His digestive powers are limitless. Okay, so the acharyas of the Madhva Sampradaya established Udupi as the chief center, and the monastery there was known as Uttarahi Mutt. And then Prabhupada lists the Parampara coming from Madhvacharya, which we know or we've heard or can look up. And then after the 16th Acharya, Vidyadhiraj Tirtha, there was another disciplic succession including Rajendra Tirtha. Vijayadwaj, he's a famous commentator on the Bhagavatam. Sometimes we find Prabhupada is quoting him in his Bhagavatam purports, Vijayadwaj Tirtha. Purushottam Subramanya Vyasarai, 19th Acharya Ramchandra Tirtha had another, anyway, he goes on. Raghavendra Tirtha is another famous. So, to date, in the Udupi Monastery, there are another 14 Madhva Tirtha sannyasis. So, anyway, that's most of the information there. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw this Narataka Gopal. It would seem this is the same deity as Udupi Krishna. But it may also be another deity, smaller deity they have there, which they call Navanita Krishna, Krishna dancing for butter. In each hand he's holding a ball of butter and he's dancing. Because we know from Bhagavatam, the gopis, they came before Krishna and they said, if you dance, we'll give you a little bit of sandesh, or a little some sweet we'll give you. So Krishna starts to dance. He starts to stamp his little feet just to please his devotees. Prabhupada says, therefore he's called Gopi Jana Vallabha. When we chant Gopal mantra in our sampradaya, we're all initiated in this mantra. So one of the names is Gopi Jana Vallabha, and we can meditate in this way. Krishna's only program, natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate natat samashchyabhyate kashchatrishyate ityadi. His only program is to please his devotees, because otherwise he has no responsibility, no obligation, no requirement. We need things. And we go to him to fulfill our needs. But he needs nothing. He is completely purna. Purnamidam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, Madhvacharya, he was expert in his studies after learning all the Vedas. He specialized in the Aitreya Upanishad. And it's said that he left this world at the age of about 80 years old. He left this world while he was speaking from the Aitreya Upanishad. There's a place in the Ananteshwara temple where his parents worshipped and where he also worshipped. It's directly across the street from the Udupi Shri Krishna Mutt. And there's a place there you can still go there, and it shows you can see his seat, Vyasa-san, where he used to sit and speak, mainly from Aitreya Upanishad. At least when he left the world, he was speaking from Aitreya Upanishad. He was very fond of it. So Aitreya Upanishad is one of those Upanishads that, in the spirit of the Upanishads, is urging one towards self-understanding. In the beginning, it describes some things about the creation of this world and the species within it. Then it talks about food, the necessity of food in this world, and the nature of food, and how Everything is food for everything else in this world. And then it talks about, it starts raising questions that, about sight, for example. Who is the person who sees? Is the visual faculty, is that the real Atma? Is it the thing that hears? Is it what touches? What is this Atma? This is the idea. Aitreya Upanishad is speaking on these lines, bringing us to a point of atato brahma jignyasa, or atato atma jignyasa. Understand what is the self. Because until we understand ourselves, there's no way we're going to understand Krishna, or even anyone else. So Madhva's philosophy is, as I said, Shuddha Dvaita, pure dualism. But that's maybe a slightly misleading term. It might be better to call it pure pluralism, because he actually has a fivefold distinction between the jivas and the Lord, between the Lord and his energy, between the jivas and his energy, between the jivas and the jivas, and between the energy and the energy. Whereas all the other Vedanta Acharyas have some degree of identity with the Supreme, Madhvacharya cuts it off altogether. You are not the same as the Supreme. In fact, this famous Mahavakya, what we call Mahavakyas, Shankaracharya calls them that. Tattvamasi in the Upanishads. Tattvamasi. Madhvacharya, Shankaracharya takes it as Tattvamasi. You are that. But Madhvacharya says, na, 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 na. He says, it is Tattvam Asi. You in fact exist. Tattvam means in fact. Taking it as apparently as an adverb here. So this is his mood. He's not going to compromise with Mayavad at all. And it's very important for us to keep this in mind, because Srila Prabhupada, when he gave us the pranam mantra that we sing for him, also specified very clearly, nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatya desha tarine. His mission, it would seem, was to rid the world, beginning with the West, of this nirvishesha shunyavad ideal. Before Madhvacharya, there wasn't a whole lot of Buddhism, but in his time, that was the main threat. And he also argued with the Buddhists very vigorously and defeated them roundly. There's one famous Buddhisagar, I think, came to argue with Madhvacharya, bringing along a crack logician with him. And after the logician's name was Vadi Singh, and after the logician was trounced by Madhvacharya, the Buddhist scholar himself said, okay, well, let's take a recess for tonight, and then we'll come back in the morning and I'll deal with you. So everybody knows what happened after that? They both disappeared in the middle of the night, never to be seen again. They didn't come back. So Madhvacharya, he was preaching hardcore dualism, uncompromising devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are some very important differences between his philosophy and the philosophy taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which we don't really need to go into because it's getting a little bit late now, but for those who are losing sleep about it, you can ask after class, I suppose. Anyway, this is Madhvacharya's disappearance day. He left this world while vigorously preaching Krishna consciousness in the holy place of Udupi. Should we be so fortunate. Anyway, we can pray for his mercy. We need his mercy. Our mission is not different from his. It's not over yet. This insidious ideology reincarnates itself age after age after age, along with those who propagate it. And therefore, Krishna has arranged for us in this world that we have eternally a burden to fulfill, eternally an onus, a hard task to combat all these godless ideologies that now have come to dominate the world, and to offer, better than that, to offer the example of pure, blissful Krishna consciousness as an alternative. This was the mission of Madhvacharya, this is the mission of Srila Prabhupada, and this is our mission as well. We'll stop here, unless anybody has any comments or any questions. No question, no comments? One, please.
Maybe I misheard, but I thought you said that Mother Nature Lakshmi is something like
Indira, Indira. Yeah, Lakshmi, just as Krishna has many names. The question is that he thinks I said that another name of Lakshmi is Indira. And yes, it is. Indira means like a lotus. She's also called Kamala, Lakshmi. As we know, she stands on a lotus. Kamalasanastha, Lakshmi Devi. So Indira Patim. Generally, his Dwadasha Stotra, his prayers, he's praising the Lord as the Lord of limitless opulence and power and qualifications, who is worshipped by so many great demigods, who is the Lord of Lakshmi, who incarnates in so many different incarnations. This mood he's in, Aishwarya Bhava, like that. Okay, anything else? Yeah, please, Brahmachari. There's a microphone coming so that people can hear your questions on the net.
No. Oh, yes. So why specifically why the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took his initiation from this line from Madhavacharya especially? Why not other sampradayas? There is some.
I'm not sure I get your question. Can you repeat it?
I mean, why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took his initiation from this line?
Yeah. Why did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu take his initiation in this line? Well, as a matter of fact, in some respects, you can say he didn't. He actually took initiation from Keshava Bharati into the Shankar Sampradaya. We can assume to purify it, but also you have to recognize that the social convention in those days was that the only sampradaya that was cohesive and clearly authoritative enough to have the respect that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted, and we do recall that that was his motive in taking sannyas, the most respected tradition of Vedanta in those days was the Shankara Sampradaya. At the same time, he did take initiation from Ishwarapuri, who was coming in the Madhva line. Because Madhva himself had preached in Bihar, he had left, we can assume, some disciples there, and even to this day there are some Madhvas in Bihar, in that area. So when he went to Gaya, he took initiation from Ishwarapuri. But here's the thing. The reason he took this initiation from Ishwarapuri is because Ishwarapuri is the one who had this pure devotion that completely stunned him. At least that was the Leela. He was so impressed by Ishwarapuri that wherever you can get it, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita Amati, Rup Goswami says, wherever you can find this Krishna Bhakti, you have to grab it. That's my answer. There may be other answers, but you know, we can say that. Is that okay? A lady in the back had a question also.
Thank you for a wonderful lecture. You mentioned many names Madhvacharya had, mm-hmm. So how come it stayed to this name, Shrimadvacharya?
Well, probably Madhva is the easiest one. Otherwise, you have to think, well, Madhvacharya, Purna Prajna, all these other, Vasudeva. But Madhva, two syllables, bus. So I said it's an abbreviation. Okay, anything else? Well, if not, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Madhvacharya ki jai.